yes, great to have your company for the very first time on the Players Podcast, the latest in the audio offerings from Keep Up. And, you know, we're really excited to bring you a new concept, a new show, which is all about the players, their opinions, their views on the game, some of the game's hottest talking points and issues. We're going to bring you some legends as well over the season, and of course, all the voices of the Liberty League as well. Today, a big show to kick things off with the World Cup around the corner. We're going to be talking about Socceroos, the makeup of that squad, which players are putting their hand up, including my two guests today, the Qatar World Cup, access all areas with the A-League, and the games coming up this weekend. So massive show to get through. I think it's time we introduce our first guest. First of all, I'd like to welcome the captain of Adelaide United and one of the players that helped the Socceroos get to the World Cup by scoring his penalty, Craig. Craig Goodwin, welcome to the show, mate. Great to have you on the First Players Podcast.
Robbie, nice to be on here. I'm obviously excited, and I think it's a good thing for the public to be able to see a different side of the players and have access to something different.
Appreciate that, mate. Now, I did have a big spiel ready to go for our next guest as well, but this morning on social media, I've seen he's just achieved something pretty big. Chris Economides, the five-a-side winners at Melbourne Victory training this morning, mate. Congratulations.
Thanks, mate. Good to be here. We're working hard. The boss has got us in twice today, so enjoying it. Beautiful day.
Well, appreciate your time in between the two sessions. Just quietly, how much do footballers love the five-a-side? I know I was someone who just absolutely lived for it. I don't know if people know how much you boys love playing five-a-side.
Oh, I think it's the best part of training. I mean, there's all different components to training. There's the tactical, the fitness, the technical, and then there's the game stuff. So that's the best. We enjoy that the most.
Well, I thought I'd butter you up and get you nice and happy before we hit the big questions. We're going to dive straight into things on this show. We're not going to hang around. We want to make it punchy, quick, and get to the point. So Socceroos squad announcement only a couple of weeks away now. World Cup around the corner. Firstly to you, Craig, how do you think you sit at the moment in the makeup of this squad? What do you think your chances are?
It's a good question. Obviously, if you'd asked me if I'd had a full, fully fit pre-season, I'd say I feel confident of performing well in the league and putting myself in a good position. Thankfully, I've been able to get myself fit enough in time for the start of the season, and now it's about getting as many minutes as possible. And then from those minutes, just producing as much as I can for the team, helping Adelaide with either goals or assists and trying to pick up as many points. But I think for myself, for Chris, for a lot of the players, it's a tense period in terms of vying for selection. And, you know, Chris will know as well, you're never safe in your role in the Socceroos. So whoever's in that setup will be pushing themselves and trying to do as the best they can in the short performances they have before the World Cup to put themselves up for selection.
Chris, where do you think you sit in the landscape?
Yeah, I think Craig summed it up perfectly from a mentality point of view. You know, every player has their little hurdles. You might have a few niggles early on the season. Last season, I had some hamstring problems that were buggering me. And I think timing is everything in football. And I think players like myself and Craig and many others will just try and get consistent run of good games. And like Craig said, you've got to focus on your club first and playing good here and winning games and points. And if it's meant to be, then that'll translate into other people in the Socceroos setup selecting you and having their opinions of you in a positive way.
You mentioned timing. Last season, you didn't actually score, I don't think, for Melbourne Victory during the regular season. You mentioned your hamstring injuries. Do you think the timing could be right for you now? You've hit the ground running with a goal and assist in the Big Blue?
Yeah, I think for me now, it was really important to have a good, solid pre-season, which I had. I had loads of games and I didn't miss one session. So feeling kind of back to my fitness where it should be and kind of the body is finally working the way it should. So I'm feeling really good and really confident and obviously just trying to start the season really well with Victory. We've got an amazing team and amazing club and coaching staff. So I think the key for me is just to keep enjoying the football here.
What's it like for you then trying to vie for a spot in that Victory team? You mentioned the players that you have. Trying to get a spot in the starting 11, let alone a spot in the Socceroos, is it all sort of on your mind? Or as you say, you're just trying to get into that first 11 for Victory?
Yeah, not really. I mean, we kind of take it day by day here at Victory. everything's set up for us perfectly to come in and train and play hard. So, I mean, when we're given the chances, there's loads of good players in our squad where everyone's kind of doing well and fighting and training, which is kind of what you want to see for a team that's going to go on and do good things this year.
Usually the major tournaments and the big things that come as a footballer and international football comes at the end of a season. It's coming just six games in for you guys this time around. So there's no time to really to build into the year. You know, sometimes like yourself, Craig, you sort of take a little bit of time to find your feet into a season and start building towards the back end. But it's almost a sprint straight out of the blocks this time around.
Yeah, you're right. But I also think on the flip side, it could be a good thing as well. I think sometimes you see when you've had a long season and then in the off season, you're coming into a national team competition, you can have players that are also a bit fatigued as well. A lot of boys that have been through, you know, 40, 50 plus games and a lot of minutes in the legs and starting to fatigue a bit. So it could work both ways in the fact that everyone will be fresh, might be maybe a little bit erratic at times, but I think you'll see a very, I think, dynamic and energetic tournament.
Graham Arnold was on radio last night talking about Marco Tilio and the conversations he's had with him over the last couple of weeks and checking in to see how he's feeling and how's he going. What sort of correspondence have you two had from the national team and have you had conversations with Graham Arnold recently?
Yeah, I've spoken obviously really closely with the medical staff, with the Socceroos, obviously having the injury that I had last year on the camp and managing it there and then coming back to pre-season and taking as long as it did. So was in close contact with them, spoken to Arnie a couple of times and spoke to him a couple of days ago. And he just said, obviously, he said, well done in getting yourself fit, getting yourself back playing minutes, and now it's to push and perform and do well. So, you know, that for me, that conversation's there, it's been had, and the message is clear. It's, you know, and it's what I would expect anyway. It's performing as well as I can for club level, which I think will be the same. It'd be the exact same message for every single player vying for a position in that squad. Focus on your club, perform well with your club, and then the rest should take care of itself.
Yeah, I think Craig summed it up perfectly, word for word. The correspondence, maybe weekly, with the Socceroos set up and staff, and obviously just go in and perform for your club and enjoy it and do your best, really, has been the message.
I've got an article coming out, should be out now at the moment, actually, if you're listening to this podcast. An interview with Curtis Good. We know Curtis signed a six-year deal to go and play in the Premier League with Newcastle when he was 19 and got injured in the lead-up to the 2014 World Cup playing against Ecuador, got a hip injury. Now, one of the things, I don't want to give the interview away, but one of the things he really touches on is the fact that he'd wish he'd done things a little bit differently in terms of his injury. He tried to rush back and get back fit. For you, Craig, is it a case of all or nothing with the World Cup so close? Do you risk breaking down and maybe being out long-term purely to get this dream of heading to Qatar?
Yeah, well, I think I've already hit that stage, to be honest. I've been in that period. So for me, back end of or the not the season just gone, the one before, I injured myself coming into the final series. I ruptured my syndesmosis. So coming back pre-season for the beginning of last season, I tried to rush it, thinking, you know, I need to get back in the team. I need to be playing. I need to help the team as much as I can. And I don't want to be out for the start of the season. I don't want to be missing games. I need to push myself to get this right. And I pushed myself too early and got shin splints. So I was out for another 2-3 weeks within that preseason, and then only ended up having 2 weeks, a 2 week preseason building into last season. So I think I learned from that and knowing what potentially this injury was as an overload and the bone stress as well. It was letting it settle as much as it possibly can before pushing it. And so we knew that we were clear with the plan with the Socceroos physios, with Adelaide physios of, all right, this is how long we need for it to settle. We'll take it by week, day by day basis. If it's feeling good earlier, we can perhaps push it earlier. But for me, it was leaving it to settle enough that I can then start to build it up. And we are a little bit, I guess, with it was a, a bit against the clock to try and get me up and running for games at the start of the season, because that was, I guess that was the benchmark to be ready for playing games at the start of the season. So I've hit that point and now my body's feeling good. I'm happy with that. I'm getting treatment on it to keep obviously everything ticking over and stuff like that. But I'm fully fit, fully ready to go, and hopefully this coming weekend against Sydney can play 90 minutes.
The opening two rounds of the A-League has seen a few bolters, a few players put their hand up. We know Garang Kuol's off to Europe and doing good things with the under-20s Australian team in Uzbekistan, I think it is. Who's impressed you most of the Aussie boys vying for a position in the opening couple of rounds, Chris?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of talented players. I can't probably name anyone in particular, but there have been lots of good players everywhere. And I think, you know, it's good to see for Australian football so many, especially younger players, coming through and doing well.
Craig, you saw it on the weekend firsthand with MacArthur Balls and Daniel Azani, someone who plays in a similar position to you. Is it, does it hurt you, but does it sort of sting you a little bit when you see a player maybe in your position having a really great game?
Look, to be honest, for me personally, not really. I've never really tried to let myself get caught up in those thoughts during a game or in that process. Obviously, we know there's a lot of players, a lot of attacking players vying for those spots and those positions. And the second you get caught up thinking about what another person's doing or what another player is doing, how they're playing, you're not thinking about what your role is in the game. So for me, that's the single most important thing for me when you're in the game is thinking about what's my role right now, what am I supposed to be doing in this moment. I mean, it's something that I've learned over a period of time as a youngster. You get caught in the game thinking about, oh, I missed that pass, or I'm playing really well, or I'm playing really poorly. And you're not necessarily thinking about what exactly you need to be doing right now, whether it's attacking or defensive structure. So for me, I always fall back on that little line of what's my role right now, and that keeps me present in the game. And then I know from there I just have to obviously provide when I've got the ball and focus on that. But for me, it's mostly thinking about myself and performing for my team. I get it's kind of cliche to say that you don't want to look at other players doing well, but I mean that aspect is there. You know that those players are in contention as well, but I back myself to perform to my maximum and have a very good start to the season and be in that squad.
I'm sure you would have seen some of the comments over the weekend discussion around different coaches and their different views to getting players to play to the World Cup. We saw Paddy Kisnorbo say, I'm not the national team coach. It's not my job to get Marco Tilio to the World Cup. And then on the flip side, we saw Carl Viet say, yep, I'm going to do everything I can to help my players get to the World Cup. And whether he meant it in this way or not, he kind of said, you know, even if that means sacrificing some performances for the club, what we think he meant was, let's play Craig Goodwin back into form. He's one of our best players. What are the conversations you've had with Tony Popovich, Chris? Has there been any discussions about getting you to a World Cup or anything of that nature?
No, I don't think so. I think here it's we're pretty focused on Melbourne Victory at the moment and starting the season really well. I mean, we've got, you all saw on the weekend, the fantastic fan base we've got, and it's a big club here in the A-League, so there hasn't been any discussions at all. We just kind of focus and on our next opponent every week, and we start building the plan for that. And we're all involved in that, and you know, we're excited for it. We look forward to every game, every weekend. So I don't think the thought process goes much beyond that here.
Craig, did you cop any shit from the team after Carl basically said he was going to play you to get you to a World Cup?
Nah. I didn't cop anything from the team or anything from that aspect, but you know, obviously from a team perspective, we've got a great group here and we've got a very hard working and honest group, and everyone wants to help each other, and they know that my focus isn't on making the World Cup or playing my games with Adelaide to make sure I'm there at the World Cup, because that's not the way that that I operate, and it's not the way I think it works as such, you know. I think Chris and I have said it multiple times already throughout this interview. It's, you really have to focus on your club level and your job at hand and not getting ahead of yourself and thinking about things so far in advance, because that's when you get caught and forget some of the little things that you have to do along the way to put yourself in that position. So for me, you know, the boys have been good in helping me back with injury and positivity and everything like that. And it's not about let's get Craig to the World Cup. It's about let's get Craig fit and let's get Adelaide United working on all cylinders and performing at our best so that we can pick up points, because we want to have a good, strong year this year. We want to go further than what we did last year. And to do that, we have to be, pushing each other to the absolute maximum to pick up points in as many games as possible.
Mentioned Garang Kuol before. Obviously, you know, he's had a massive 12 months, got that move to Newcastle, scored plenty of goals, Socceroos debut, starred against Barcelona. He's moved overseas now at quite a young age without having made a professional game. Chris, you spent a lot of your youth football playing in Italy, I think with Atalanta and Lazio.
Yep.
You're in maybe a unique position where you can sort of look at both sides of the coin. Do you think there's an advantage for players, young players playing in Europe, to get to the Socceroos or to be recognised quicker? Do you think it's harder for young guys in the A-League to be recognised?
I think in terms of vying for Socceroos selection, it's a flip of a coin. You can do well overseas and get selected, as I did before playing any A-League games. I got selected in the Socceroos at 19. Or you can have a breakout season at 20 years old and get selected. So, I mean, it really depends on who's the boss of the Socceroos at the time and what you're doing overseas. I don't think it's either this or that. I think there's so many variables involved, which country you're in, which club you're in. Are you playing regularly overseas versus are you going to get more of a chance in your local town in Australia? So I think it's each case needs to be analysed individually and then obviously make the best decision you can for yourself.
When you got your opportunity to go to the Socceroos at 19, I imagine you'd played mainly in a reserve league. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was playing week in, week out for the reserve Lazio team and training daily with the first team and being on the bench for them. And I was playing with the Olerus and Young Socceroos at the time as well. So I was involved in the setup a lot. And that was under Ange. And once I got my first call into camp, I absolutely loved it. I was over the moon. And, I was there all of a sudden with all my idols.
I suppose what I was getting at there with the question was playing that reserve football in Europe and then going to the Socceroos, do you feel like that equipped you well enough? Do you feel like you were ready at that stage?
Yeah. I mean, I felt if I was 19 playing reserve grade in Italy, I felt technically and tactically very well equipped for the Socceroos camp when I was called in. I felt good, felt confident, and yeah, I didn't feel like because I hadn't had a few seasons in the A-League that I was less equipped.
We'll stick with the World Cup, but we'll change tact from the Socceroos. I spoke to you a little bit earlier about this, Craig, about some of the human rights issues around the tournament and in particular some of the recent stuff around same-sex marriage and same-sex couples. And we've seen England have come out and basically said that Harry Kane's going to wear the rainbow armband, the captain's armband, the One Love armband, and they're willing to sort of cop any punishment or penalty that they receive. What's your communication from the FA and has there been any discussions amongst the players around these issues and any education undergone or, the player's going to be doing anything in this area?
So I think in terms of this topic, the PFA is across it and looking to do something. I think a few of us have been contacted to put together a video in place, obviously, about the human rights and the World Cup. So it's not, I'm not too across it in terms of that. I don't have all the information, but I know the PFA is right across it and they're putting something in place for that.
Well, that's good to hear. We'll change tax now and head to the A-League a little bit. One of the great initiatives this season from the A-Leagues, from Keep Up and everyone involved has been the Access All Areas. And I tuned in with great interest this week, Melbourne Victory against Sydney FC. Nani was the main star of the show. I mean, I think everyone was taken aback by his professionalism, his body for one, how much he wanted to win, his celebrations after the game. I mean, Chris, you must just be in awe to be in his presence all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great body, like you said. but he's a good guy. He's down to earth. I mean, for someone who's played at the top level that you can get in football. You've played at Manchester United, you've won Champions Leagues, but to be celebrating the Big Blue win on round one is it means that you still have that fire in your stomach to go on and compete and win things in football. So I think it's great to see, and that's a reason why he's still playing at 36 or whatever it is. And yeah, it's fantastic to have around.
What's your been interaction with him personally, not on camera, but you know, have you spent much time with him? Have you picked his brain?
Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, he can have the most stupid conversation as you want, or he can also tell you about his assists to Rooney or his highs at Man United under Ferguson. So we've gone out many times together and with the team as well. And you know, it's kind of a balance between picking his brain for all his incredible knowledge and just having a laugh with him like a regular mate.
I thought one thing that the show did do was maybe show a slightly different side of Tony Popovich. We know he's renowned for his hardline stance and his fitness regimes and his diets and all these sort of things. And I've talked about it ad nauseum in the past, and I'm not sure whether he's softened or not. I know he used to love to have a joke, and once you get on his good side and you've earned his trust and respect, you can have a great laugh with a boss. But looking at that, he was joking. You spent a lot of time with him from Perth now to Victory. What were some of the changes you've seen in him over the last four or five seasons?
I don't think there's that many changes from a coaching perspective. I think once you kind of are switched on and you're serious about your career and football and the club you're playing at, I don't think you'll have many problems at all going forward. And I think when there's a lot of people who have the same kind of mentality and, you know, they obviously bring in the personalities they want, I think it just becomes easier for everyone, because you have less issues in the change room, you have more people vying and wanting the same thing as a club and as an individual as well. So, I mean, I love it. I enjoy it. I enjoy all the training we do. I enjoy the hard sessions like today. I enjoy, you know, the tough love and the jokes as well, as you mentioned. So it's, I think it comes down to the individual, but I think if you operate in a kind of professional way and an honest way, I think you'll always be always do well.
One player who's been operating in that professional and honest way, and again, was a big part of the Access All Areas, which you can catch on YouTube or the Keep Up website, was Nick D'Agostino. He scored a wonderful header. I mean, he looks like a player that's possibly the most confident that I've ever seen him, and he's got the most belief in his body and his game that he can be a true number nine in this league and beyond.
Yeah, Dags has come miles in the... I was with Dags in Perth a few years ago, and he's come miles in terms of technical and tactical abilities. He's an awesome player and, fantastic guy, which always you say that, but people's careers progress just on their mentality and personality alone. So I think he's a good player, and we're definitely going to see a lot of goals and moments from him in the next 10 years or however long he decides to play.
Craig, Adelaide featured not on the first Access All Areas, but it sort of spawned the show when they followed you during the finals campaign last year in your loss against Melbourne City. A big part of that show was Josh Cavallo, and obviously he came out as gay earlier in the season, and that was a big part of the show, and we saw behind the scenes and in the change rooms and how that was received. This week he's been in London to receive Man of the Year from Alpha Magazine, I believe, if I'm correct. How have you sort of seen him juggle his footballing career and also being a voice for that community? You know, we're in the middle of it, not the middle of a season, but right at the start of the season, he's getting the opportunity to go and receive such a massive award, which is fantastic. How's he sort of juggling being a footballer and also being a leading voice in that space?
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting topic as well, because I've had this conversation with a few people outside, and Josh is in a unique position where he is the first professional footballer to come out. So he is in a position that is completely new and no one has any experience in doing. So he has handled it extremely well, I think. At times, I think he's definitely needed people around him, a great support system, which he has here at the club. And he has that away from the field, I think, as well. So that's definitely helped him. But, you know, Josh is a great kid. You know, he's got a good mentality in terms of focusing on his football as well. And that's something that I've spoken to him about, is obviously with all the off-field things, that when you're here at the club, the focus has got to be on the football and on the performance for the team and doing that. You know, for the opportunities he has away from football, he has a great relationship with Carl and the coaching staff and the club here. So they're always speaking in close contact. And when he has these opportunities to go, so long as it's not at the detriment to his football, he's obviously allowed to go on these things. At the moment, he's currently injured with a strange injury. At the moment, he's got an inflamed spleen. So it's quite a weird one from that aspect. So I think he's got another month or two out from that aspect, but he's training. He can't have any contact at the moment. But
how did he get that? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure on how he got the injury, but yes, obviously speaking with him, you know, he's been in close contact with the doctors and everything like that. But just a very strange one that I've not heard of before, but he's obviously, again, put another challenge onto him of having to deal with everything he does off the field and on the field, and now not being able to obviously train or play fully with the team. So, but like I said, Josh is a great kid and he's got a great attitude and you know, I think he's handled himself exceptionally during this period.
Well, I think everyone would agree the Access All Areas has been a huge success so far. I've thoroughly enjoyed looking at all the behind-the-scenes stuff, looking at the different coaches, the assistant coach of Victory against Sydney and some of the tactical stuff about switching Nani onto the right when they could see Sydney was tiring on that left side. There is another episode, if it's not out already. It's out tomorrow at the time of recording, and that's going to be with Charlie Austin at Brisbane. Charlie's going to go into obviously his backstory, why he decided to come to Australia. He actually opens up really opens up on some family issues as well that him and his wife have had to deal with. And I can tell you now, he gives one of the all-time great sprays to his Brisbane Roar teammates at halftime. He was not happy one bit. I've been told on good authority, do not miss Charlie Austin's halftime spray. So for anyone who thinks these big name foreigners are here for a holiday, make sure you check out Access All Areas this week with Brisbane Roar's Charlie Austin, because you're going to get a rude shock. Speaking of Rockets, Tony Popovich gave a rocket to Melbourne Victory this week after their poor performance against Western Sydney. 1-0 loss, Chris. What was it about the Wanderers that made it so difficult for you?
I think, they brought a physical game to us, and I think we probably didn't win as many challenges and second balls as we should have. So I think it didn't have anything to do with the footballing ability or the tactics. I think we just weren't mean enough in respect to the game. So I think we definitely know that now. We've come together and we're kind of adding a little bit more in training in terms of competing and fighting to make sure that come Saturday we're ready to go in that aspect of the game.
You mentioned Saturday, and I mentioned Access All Areas. They'll be following Paddy Kitsnorbo this week from Melbourne City in the lead up to that game. So just be careful how close you get to him, Chris, because he might be mic'd up. You seem to have the wood over Melbourne City last year. Obviously, a huge derby on Saturday night. I'm hearing close to a sellout, if not already. Why were you able to get the advantage over them last season? And they've started the season really, really well. So you're going to have to be on top of your game this week.
Yeah, of course. I think they're a great team. And I also think that our fans have been fantastic in every game this year and last year, but in particular the derbies, they honestly give you that extra edge. And even when it's City playing at home, it still feels like it's our home game. So they're definitely the 12th man. I know you say that a lot in football, but our fans really are. So I think that definitely gives us a little slight edge on them.
Craig, three away games to start the season. Wellington, Phoenix, MacArthur Balls and Sydney this week. A bit of a theme for the first 2 weeks has been the lack of, well, probably the first week it was the lack of goal-scoring chances created. Against the Bulls, it was more so the lack of finishing. How do you sort that problem out in front of goal?
Yeah, I think Carl touched on it in his interviews about us not being ruthless enough. And Chris touched on it a bit in their game, I guess, Western Sydney, of not being mean enough. And I think it's something that us as a team definitely have to bring a bit more to our game, and having that ruthlessness and that, you know, bit of steel about it, of putting in hard challenges, not to hurt people, but to impose yourself on the game, and those things filter into other aspects. And so for us at the moment, it's having that ruthlessness in front of goals, that when you get a chance, it's that full concentration of arriving, getting your timing right and putting the ball in the back of the net. And if you have to, you know, going through someone to do that, you know, putting the ball in and following through or whatever. It's having that intent to really score and make sure that you put the chances away. Because like you said, against Wellington, we had a lot of crosses, but probably didn't work the ball enough into good enough areas. Against MacArthur, we created a lot of chances but weren't ruthless enough in the finishing action. So we probably had probably six clear-cut chances to score, a couple offside, one disallowed, and then three or four missed. So we created more than enough to win that game. But then on the flip side, we had our, I guess, poor mistakes to give away goals. But we have to impose ourselves on the game more and definitely be more ruthless in front of goal.
And for you, Sydney, this week, 3 o'clock kickoff, which I know you love.
Yeah, I would say for me personally, 3 o'clock kickoff is not my most cherished time to play. I do prefer the night game. I think it makes for a better atmosphere, and I think it's a more relaxed day for the players in the build-up. But having said that, you know, Sydney's got a new stadium, and it's going to be fantastic to play in that. And yeah, Sydney FC has started reasonably well. Obviously, they had a reasonable game against Victory, but lost the game, and then won last week, so against Western United. So it's going to be a tough one for us, but we have to really obviously focus and bring in a good performance.
Chris, you obviously got the 3 points against Sydney, but were you impressed? Did you feel like they'd lifted from last year, and the new signings up front looked to be really dangerous?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're miles ahead of last year where they were. And yeah, they've definitely built on what they had last year. They're a good team. They were dangerous getting forward. And yeah, definitely be a challenge for Adelaide.
How much of a focus have they been for you, Craig?
I think the danger with Sydney is definitely in their attack. Obviously, they're changing a bit the way they've played, and they brought in two new wingers. I think have started the season pretty well, but defensively, I think is where we can really hurt them. If we have our attack firing on all cylinders and move the ball quickly and try and shift and make the space, I think we can hurt them with the defense. I think they're probably not as secure as what they have been in the past, but it's going to be a tough game. We've got to be at our absolute best. You know, Sydney away is always a tough fixture. And for us, we're going to have to be on our game defensively and then in attack be firing.
Well, boys, I want to thank you very much for your time. I know you've got a double session today, Chris. You're back out on the park later. Craig, you've already done two sessions, and it's really difficult, actually, to get players for, 30-minute block of time. So we appreciate you guys coming on the very first Players Podcast, giving you all your insights about the Socceroos, Access All Areas, World Cup, the A-League season so far. So a massive thank you. Hopefully everyone listening has enjoyed the show. All the best on the weekend, and all the best for the Socceroos as well.
Thanks, Robbie. Good to see you, Craig.
That just about wraps things up for the very first episode of the Players Podcast, our first edition. We hope to bring you a weekly pod every Wednesday with a couple of the biggest names. As I said off the top, we're going to have legends, female guests as well. For all your A-League and Australian football news, make sure you check out the Keep Up website. Also, another podcast on Mondays with my old friend Daniel Garb. We've split up. We've gone our separate ways, but he's still running the show on a Monday for all the weekend's roundup action. Thanks again for your company. I'm Robbie Cornthwaite. Until next time.